So I'm just going to call the meeting to order, and if Doug can join, great. If not, we will catch him up on the next one. So I'm going to call the July 5th meeting to order. The first item of business is approving the minutes from our meeting on June 21st, and I move to approve the minutes.
Second.
It's been approved and seconded. Any discussion, debate? Seeing none. All those in favor say aye of approving the minutes. Thanks, Sarah. Great. Minutes are approved. Moving on to the loans, we have 10 loans that we are looking at today, which is a little over $4.4 million. I move to approve the loans.
A second.
Rich, do you want to walk through the loan portfolio that we're reviewing today?
Well, sure. Thanks, Sarah. You know, the loans today are primarily road work and equipment purchases. I would point out loan number 6 to the Village of Summit, which is to finance their 2022 capital improvement budget. That is becoming a more common purpose where they will include the anticipated capital improvements that they intend for the whole year. And in fact, the Village of Summit's capital improvement budgets are almost totally street and equipment purchases also. But we do have a budget for that full amount. And the second one I'd like to point out is loan number 10 to the town of Janesville. That is something that we've been financing for a number of years now. They actually reimburse or pay the city of Janesville for their fire protection. The cost of that has gone up significantly over the years, but that's how the town of Janesville pays for the required fire protection that they provide their electors. And that's all I have on the loans today. Are there any questions?
Thanks, Rich. There's no questions from my end. Josh, any questions about the loans?
No questions from me either.
Great. So all those in favor of approving the loans for today, say aye. Aye, Sarah.
Hi, Josh.
Loans are approved. And I know that we've got no old business. And so I don't know, Tom, if we want to put the discussion on investments in firearm companies for the next agenda that we have in 2 weeks then under old business.
Yes, I think that's a great idea.
Okay, great. And then do we also need to add for the next meeting an update on the Forest Service transaction, or do we want to play that by ear?
Let's play that by ear. If I have some development there, I'll gladly put it on the agenda.
Okay, perfect. So we've got no old business and no new business for today. Rich, do you have a chief investment officer's report?
Not much today, Sarah. I was going to point out that in 2 weeks we'll be discussing the implications of eliminating ETFs from our portfolios that include any investment in civilian gun manufacturing or retailing. And then in 4 weeks I'll be presenting our quarterly update on investment performance. And that's all I have for today.
Sounds good, Rich.
I have a quick question. So on the investments issue, is that just going to be an update at that point? I mean, I have, frankly, a number of questions, and you know, I don't have a great sense of whether there's any data on these sorts of decisions and how they impact both in terms of investments, but also in terms of how much they impact
corporate behavior.
And then there's also the question of, like, does that mean we're basically not able to invest in any ETFs? So I guess there's a variety. So I'm happy to have that discussion in 2 weeks. I think there may be a lot of follow-up that's necessary.
I agree. You know, I think that there's going to be different points of view and different implications that we'll be discussing. And We'll see what the board decides to do from then.
Josh, are there questions that you want to just highlight right now that you're thinking about that we can go into for our investment committee meeting next week?
Yeah, I mean, it may depend to some extent on what the answers to some of the questions are, but I mean, you know, one certainly is what the, you know, implications are with respect to our fiduciary duty. A second is, you know, how broadly would a decision like this sweep in terms of our ability to make investments. I'd be curious to know how it compares to what other states and funds have done. We were able to do a little bit of digging initially, and my understanding is that one fund in Nevada maybe did something similar, but it was focused on assault-style rifles and sellers of assault-style rifles. You know, another thing I don't exactly know what the answer is to, and this is more of a policy question, but, you know, how you draw the line in terms of where you're going to say you're not going to invest versus where you are, you know, I mean, there's all sorts of other things that, you know, have policy implications when investments are made, you know, just as an example, you know, oil companies or, you know, I mean, you can think of a number of examples where people may raise some objection. And, you know, if there aren't a lot of other funds that have done similar things, is there a reason for that? You know, those are some of the questions I have, but others, there may be other questions that folks have too.
Well, if you don't mind me butting in here, first of all, those are great questions, and those are the ones that we ask ourselves every day. And sometimes the idea of how the fiduciary duty comes into play is this long-term view that if you're investing in companies that are engaged in a business that carries additional risk, for example, businesses that, you know, were manufacturing and distributing opioids. Well, at one point in time, they were doing great. And then after a while, you know, when the responsibilities of their actions came home to roost, then their stock didn't perform as well. It's kind of the same thing with what we're talking about here, is that are we looking at it and saying, oh, we shouldn't invest in these companies? Or are we saying, you know, investing in a company like this that carries some additional risk because of the fact that the future may judge otherwise in terms of the viability of that that investment. It makes you take a number of other things into account when making that decision. And so your first question was, are there other funds? We live in an amazing era where there are exchange traded funds that will do just about anything. And some of them will exclude this or that, or I'm sure Rich can probably tell you how many funds there are that are structured a certain way. So yes, there are other alternatives that you can invest in exchange traded funds that will exclude certain types of companies. But it is a board policy decision to determine what types of screening we should be looking at. Should it just be weapons manufacturers and or retailers, or are there some other areas that we want to look at as well? So anyway, thanks for giving me some talking time here.
And I think in addition to that, Tom, one thing that I want to also just emphasize with regards Josh to fiduciary responsibility, it's also a responsibility that we have to our beneficiaries. And so I think that's also got to be part of the conversation. And we know right now that this is something that, at least in my cursory conversations, weeks and months ago, have been incredibly supportive of. And so I don't think that we can discount that either. But as Tom has said, it's about managing risk with regards to our beneficiaries. But further, we live in a really great world where there are a lot of opportunities for alternative classes that we can look at. So it's not, I don't think, I think it's something that we can, again, the investment committee can come back to and share their assessment and analysis. And it's my suggestion, and I think where we just want to stay focused on is specifically what that definition is within, and I think Rich has done a really good job. It's civilian arms dealers and manufacturers is really, I think, what we have carved out, at least looking at for this scope at this particular moment.
Okay. I mean, so one other thing I'll mention that would be helpful to know, and I don't know if there's any data on this, but for retailers, for example, are, I think, all federally licensed. And so they go through background checks when they sell firearms. And so I would be curious to know, if you have fewer retailers, does that lead to more private sales where there is no background check or not? I mean, thinking through the consequences of the steps we're taking and, or having some sense of what they would be, I guess, would be helpful for my decision making. And I just don't feel like we have that data at this point.
Josh, can you help explain to me when you mean consequences of this decision?
Well, I mean, there's first.
I can tell you the consequences.
If we were to disinvest, the first question is, does that actually influence corporate behavior? But the next question is, presumably the reason that there is disinvestment in different cases is because people do want to influence corporate behavior. And so, you know, if a large dealer in an area were to stop selling a certain type of firearm, for example, is the result of that, the consequence of that, that type of firearm is, you know, that it's then sold through other means, for example, not through a federally licensed firearm dealer, so you don't have a background check conducted. You know, is there any analysis that's been done of that? I would just like to know if what data there is out there about what the impact of some of these things would be.
I will say from my end, Josh, I'm not looking at this from a corporate behavior perspective. I'm looking at it as a business risk, but also a responsibility to our beneficiaries. But it sounds like you're looking at it from, will this impact corporations?
No, that's not what I'm saying. I'm saying, will it lead to more firearms being sold without a background check, for example? Will it create a safety risk? Or will it help from a safety standpoint? And I would be interested to know if there's data out there on that.
And can you just help me understand the fiduciary connection to that, Josh?
It's a separate question from the fiduciary question.
So if making a fiduciary decision impacts if people go into the black market to buy guns?
Well, if there's disinvestment, and to your point, if the goal is not to influence corporate behavior, then maybe there is no effect because the corporations will continue doing the same thing.
I don't think we should be looking at this from a corporate behavior perspective. I don't think that's our job.
So if it's just purely through the fiduciary lens, then I guess the question, to go back to Tom's point, is why would that not be priced in by the market already? Or why do we think that the market is missing that?
I think it goes back to the two things we've talked about. It's about the additional risk, but further, I don't think that we can look at this decision blindly without also thinking about our beneficiaries. and our beneficiaries are public schools, particularly public school librarians and media specialists and kids.
And so what do we have to sort of indicate your thinking on? Is it just based on conversations, or is there some?
Yeah, I mean, I've had conversations.
Broader survey we've taken.
Yeah, I've had conversations with librarians. I've had conversations with the head of AFT. I've had conversations with the head of WEAC and their team about this.
Is there a way to survey or get input at sort of a broader level from teachers or from beneficiaries, or is there not a good way to do that?
I mean, I think the best way is their leadership are elected. And so their leadership is who speaks on behalf of the organization.
And would it be Venta who's sort of representing the beneficiaries specifically?
I would say it's WMTA, and I think it's the same. I think it's, we've got to talk to WMTA, WEAC, and AFT, which are the organizations we've been talking to.
Okay. Yeah. I mean, I have not had conversations with them about this, so I guess I don't. You had conversations there with all those groups?
Yeah, and I think something that we can easily bring to the next meeting is what they think about this too.
And have they recommended, or based on your conversations, has it been focused on specifically assault style rifles?
I have mentioned the scope, which is what we have kind of currently looked at being investments in civilian firearms and manufacturers is kind of how I have talked about it to them currently.
Okay. Is there anywhere else that has a similar policy that you're aware of?
Besides like Nevada and Connecticut and like other
Nevada
states.
Nevada we checked. I haven't looked at those states. Nevada we checked, and Nevada's on assault rifles. And there's also a limit to when they cut it off. It's only, I think, when there's been a profit made or something like that. Mm-hmm. And so it would be helpful to know, I guess, what the sort of, what others have done in similar circumstances.
One of the things that I did when we started talking about this issue is I reached out to our outside counsel who's helped us on our investments in some of the private investment funds. And I asked him about other institutional investors, for example, pension funds, how do they navigate these waters? And I was surprised when I was talking to some of the attorneys at Reinhart, they said that there are some of those pension funds that have very detailed policies on what what types of investments to avoid. I mean, obviously, there are certain religious-related institutional funds that cannot invest in anything like that. But I was surprised that pension funds also had been active in doing this. And I'll see if I can get a little bit more information on that for our next board meeting as well.
It would be helpful to know, Tom, along those lines, how they sort of get input from investors. They're you know, the beneficiaries on those issues too.
I will do that. I think it's a little bit different for pension funds because of the fact that the trustees have a fair amount of discretion. I will see what information I can get on that.
And are the trustees elected by the beneficiaries, or how does that work?
Every state is different.
Yeah, every state is different, and every pension fund is a little bit different. For some of the pension funds, obviously, those trustees are appointed by the company themselves. And in other cases, some of the retirees actually have some, and participants in the plan actually have some say in terms of who serves as a trustee.
And some just have literally like sole fiduciary responsibility just with the office. So every public fund is very different.
And so then the other thing I guess I'm curious about is, you know, I can imagine that there are lots of types of funds that our beneficiaries would not want to invest in, cigarette companies, for example. And so the other question I have is just how do we have some sort of principle that allows us, if we're to do this or something along these lines, how do you do it in a way that is administrable and doesn't make our investments a proxy for people's views on every issue that comes up.
I mean, I think Josh just resides with, this goes back to like, it resides within the commissioners in essence. And I think from my perspective, it's not like we're not opening the aperture for anything else. To me, this is looking at it at, there is a risk and there is an obligation in talking to our beneficiaries that we need to act upon. And I think discussing about that in a way that is not, that's only beneficial and not causing any sort of undue harm. But I don't think that in my mind, I don't see us opening this up to anything else besides what's already covered by our very thorough investment policy statement that, you know, we review every few years that the investment committee spends a lot of time doing.
I don't see, I guess, how vaping companies, are different, for example, though. I mean, there's risk there too. I don't know, I have any idea if we're invested in them or not, but to me that raises the exact same issues. It's just a different example of it.
I believe all the points that you're raising are important ones to look at. And as I discussed a little bit earlier, when I mentioned the plethora of these funds that are out there, there are some that are more targeted in terms of what stocks they exclude, and some of them are a little bit broader. And so, the points that you're making are certainly important to look at in terms of if we are going to divest from some of these broader ETFs and go into ETFs that are a little bit narrower, then which ETFs should we be looking at that exclude what types of companies? So, and I will take that as our charge to produce the data that'll make it easier for the board to make some of those decisions then.
Yeah, and to be clear, I appreciate all the work that you all are doing on it. I just want to make sure we're thinking through the various implications of the approach that we may take.
I always appreciate thoughtful questions, and that's the category I put all of these in today. So thank you.
Any other questions, Josh?
Okay. Not right now, at least. Doug may have others in 2 weeks.
Great. Okay, moving on to Tom. I don't know if you have anything from your report.
No, I made it back from Finland in one piece, and I'd like to to thank my staff for holding the fort while I was away, and thank our IT person, Mike Kruger, who was able to keep me connected while I was a continent away. So anyway, feels great to be back.
Glad, we're glad you are back. And I do not have anything to report besides what we were just talking about and what the investment committee is working on. So seeing that we are through the agenda, any other future agenda items?
Not for me.
All right. I move to adjourn our meeting today.
I second.
All those in favor say aye. Aye, Sarah.
Aye, Josh.
All right. Meeting's adjourned, everybody. Thank you and hope you had a good 4th.
Thanks. Have a great week, everyone.
Bye-bye.
Bye, everybody.